Hello, welcome to your meditation practice as part of the Open Heart Project. My name is Susan Piper. I am very happy to sit with you in meditation. I say that every week because every week it's true. This week is no different. So today we're going to sit together for about 10 minutes and we're going to start soon. So please take your seat, get settled, whether you're on a cushion on the floor with your legs crossed loosely in front of you. You could also kneel if you have a kneeling bench. Or you can, of course, sit in a chair or on your sofa. There is no spiritual superiority in sitting on the floor. And today we're going to continue and wrap up our conversation about the Noble Eightfold Path. Today we are on step 8. And you're welcome to go back and listen to the previous steps if you want, but you don't have to. You can jump in right here. As a reminder and a little recap, the Eightfold Path is step 4. Of the Four Noble Truths, the first teachings given by the historic Buddha upon attainment of enlightenment. He saw four things. He learned four things. He awoke to four things. I don't know if that's good English. Anyway, four things. The first, life is suffering, which means unsatisfying. Everything changes. Two is called the cause of suffering, which is pretending the First Noble Truth isn't true and trying to create things that are solid and unchanging in any case, which is understandable and human, but good luck with that. Sadly, I'm trying myself and so far has not worked out. And then the third Noble Truth is called the cessation of suffering, which means something like, now that you know what causes it, you also know how to stop doing it, which means stop doing that. Stop grasping, stop fronting, stop trying to game reality. Although if you succeed, let me know because I would love to hear what you did. And then the fourth Noble Truth is, how do you do that? How do you stop suffering? How do you stop grasping so that you can stop suffering? And as important, at least, help others to stop suffering too. So the fourth truth is how to do it, the Eightfold Path. And we began with right view and right intention, which are about how do you hold your mind as you explore this question, as you embark on your personal journey. Because if you start with the frame of mind that, well, I don't know if this is really true, but I'm a Buddhist lady told me it was, so I'm going to pretend it is, and no, that will not support you. Right view means seeing things clearly, arriving somehow at the conclusion yourself that there is nothing permanent. The only way to do that is to investigate for yourself. Don't believe me or anyone else. And I really, 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 really mean that. Then right intention naturally arises from the right view. So you go out into your world, seeing things clearly, wanting to be of benefit in some way, which doesn't mean being nice. Well, sometimes it does, but it means offering something useful, something of benefit. So those are the first two. And then the next four are, how do you act in your life when you hold the right view and the right intention? How do you bring the view and the intention into everyday life? And so the next four steps are answer that question. Right speech, right livelihood. I think I'm missing one. Right action and right effort. I think I got those in the right order. Anyway, I'll put in the notes if I didn't. So we've been through those. And in the last video, we talked about the penultimate step, right mindfulness. I just want to reverse the last two, right mindfulness. And now we come to the eighth one, right concentration. So mindfulness and concentration are about how you continue to hold your mind as you go about deploying right speech, right livelihood, and so on. So the first two are about the essential wisdom. And the next four are about your actions in the world, sometimes called ethical conduct. And then the last two have to do with how you hold awareness. Right view and right intention, the first two speak to some, in some way to conclusions that you've arrived at. That's great. You should keep checking them no matter what you've arrived at. And then the last two are about bringing awareness further, deeper, and into every moment, beginning with right mindfulness, which has something to do with being aware of what is happening around you and within you, not pretending to be aware and not being aware of what you wish was happening, although that's understandable. I do that all the time, but being aware of this moment, this now. And as I mentioned in the last video, quoting the great Texas singer-songwriter Butch Hancock, now it's now again. So right mindfulness has to do with that flow of now it's now again. Guess what? Now it's now again. Things to think about. And now right concentration. It can conjure this idea of trying really hard. And of course, it does take effort. Right concentration, sometimes called samadhi, which means absorption. There's many ways to define the word samadhi, and there are many teachings on the notion of samadhi in throughout the Buddhism and Hinduism, as far as I understand. But here, samadhi has to do with absorption. Now, interestingly, and I've been thinking about this a lot all my, you know, for 30 years, but also especially today, because I knew I was going to talk to you about it. And I don't really understand it. So what I'm going to say to you is my musings, which you should take with a giant grain of salt, as opposed to conclusions. Buddhist lady says, ixnay on that. So absorption, interestingly, almost has something to do, when I think about it, with kind of disappearing on some sort of conventional level, not really disappearing, but becoming so absorbed in what you're doing or what you're thinking or what you're feeling, whatever may be going on, that there's no difference between that thing and you. There's a melding, a blending, a full absorption. And what is absent from absorption that makes it very confounding is duality. Like, you can't be absorbed in this because there's a gap between you and this. If both you and this are trying to find each other, there's still something dualistic going on. You know, I don't know how to not do that, so please don't think I'm suggesting that I do. So in thinking about, well, how would one describe the state of non-dual absorption, which aka right concentration, which again, just, you know, taking a little side trip for a second, doesn't mean focusing really, really hard and trying not to. It may begin with that. I'm not going to lose my original point, don't worry. It may begin with being able to place your attention on whatever you want, which is, by the way, what we're practicing in meditation, placement of attention on the object of your choosing. And then holding your attention there. And when it strays, noticing that, which is also a kind of concentration, and coming back. So that's where samadhi begins, I would say, in my very unenlightened way. It begins with knowing how to do that, knowing how to place your attention, and then deepening that ability. And then at some point, perhaps, losing even the effort to concentrate because you have become concentration itself. You have let go so fully into being absorbed, into samadhi, that the dividing line between you and everything else dissolves, or at least begins to shimmer. I know that sounds weird. So an anecdote that came to mind when I was thinking about, how the hell do you explain this? How do you explain something you don't understand yourself? But nonetheless, this anecdote is what has given me probably the most useful clue as to what right concentration or samadhi might mean. And it's weird and confounding, so therefore, in my opinion, cool. I heard this anecdote. It wasn't said to me directly. Somebody asked the mysterious, controversial, astonishing meditation master. I think no matter what you think of him, there's agreement on that score. Chogyam Trungpa, who I never met, by the way, was asked once in a public talk, is the point of meditation to cultivate the inner observer, that part of each of us that is going, oh, you're thinking, come back, or what's going on in here, and so on. I don't need to explain that. You know what I mean. Is the point of meditation to cultivate the inner observer? And Trungpa Rinpoche said, yes. And then at some point, you let go even of the inner observer. You let go of the inner observer. So try to imagine for a moment, because it can be freaky to try to imagine this, that you're noticing your experience. You're thinking, yeah, what's for lunch? Oh, I'll come back to your breath. I like this. I don't like that. Whatever you're noticing. And you notice that you're noticing. And then somehow, through some means, you stop noticing that you're noticing, and only noticing remains. I don't know what that is, but I suggest that that is something to ponder. And again, when I think of what is meant by right concentration, the sort of final step on the Eightfold Path, and in many ways the culmination, what the hell does that mean? This is the anecdote that comes to memory. Is the point of meditation to cultivate the inner observer? Yes. And then you let go of the inner observer. So the last thing I'll say, and then we'll go to our practice, is, yeah, okay, when we meditate or when you're in your life, you're having experiences, you're having thoughts, and you're noticing that. I think we could all agree on that. Hold up. There's someone or something that notices that you're noticing. Am I right? You notice that you're noticing. There's another part that says, oh, I notice you noticing what you're noticing. And then again, I notice you noticing what you're noticing that you noticed. I don't know if that was enough notices, but in any case, the point I'm trying to make is that if you try to find the origin point of the noticer who's noticing the noticing and so on, you will not find it. Although if you do, let me know. You will not find it, is my guess. There is no origin point. There is only noticing or awareness. This is my theory. Not having realized it, meaning not being enlightened, not being a Buddha, all I can tell you is that this is my theory. So I invite you to try it on for size. If you have theories, please share them. I'd love to hear them. And let me know how you have enjoyed or not enjoyed this series on the Noble Eightfold Path. It's been a delight to share these thoughts with you. My hope, of course, is that they are useful for you. Then I will feel mission accomplished. So, how do we get familiar with the noticer of the noticing and the notication and all the noticing? Well, I'm fixing to do it. It's called the practice of meditation. So let's do it. In our practice, there are three things to be mindful of, and the first is our own body. So the practice begins with the way you take your seat, and you establish a good posture, which often, at least for me, begins with remembering, oh yeah, I'm in a body. I got one. I'm not just all up here ruminating. I have a whole body. And to feel that, to inhabit that, to enjoy that, is the beginning of mindfulness of body, our posture. So sit up straight is the basic central instruction. Or your version of straight, if you have back or neck problems, just do your version. And relax. While you're drawing yourself up, you're also settling down. You have a strong back body and a soft front body. The lower half of the body can feel heavy and rooted, and the upper half light and aspiring. So, strong and soft, up and down, rooted and uplifted, all that. At the same time, you're just sitting there doing nothing. So let's not forget that. The hands rest on the legs, palms down. Let the shoulders relax. The mouth is closed, but the lips and teeth can be slightly parted. The breath is natural in and out through the nose, unless you have a cold, but otherwise just, you were already breathing before I said that, so just keep doing whatever that was. The eyes are open. And the gaze is cast down to a comfortable spot in front. Whatever seems right given the distance of your screen, but up to 6 feet or 2.5 meters. And the eyes are open because we're practicing being awake. When we're awake, we can have right view and right intention and so on. So very helpful. And the eyes are receptive. If you're visually impaired, focus on the ears. Receptive, taking in, receiving. Let the brow relax. Now let your attention come to rest on your breath. Second mindfulness, mindfulness of breath, which does not mean observe the breath or notice the breath. This is noticing doesn't apply here. Feeling does. Feel the body breathe in and out. Inhale, receiving oxygen. Exhale, letting go. And again. And let your attention be carried by the breath. Rest on the breath as if the breath was a hammock and you could just place your mind in it and it was just swayed gently. Mindfulness of breath. Finally, we have mindfulness of mind, which means just let your mind be as it is. No need to stop thinking. Change thinking. Think good things. Think through things. Nope. Thoughts come and go. Period. There's no thought that is an exception to that. So just let them. You don't have to hustle them or hold on to them or anything. They just come and go on their own. Kind of like snowflakes that just fall to the ground. Thoughts. And if you notice that you have become absorbed by a line of thought, that's very good. You just woke up. Congratulations. That's excellent. Notice that. Label that moment silently, thinking. Gently let go. Don't skip that. That's the fun part. Just let go. Come back to this breath and begin again, feeling the body breathe. Mindfulness of body can create a sense of stability. Mindfulness of breath, sense of peace. And mindfulness of mind invokes a sense of tremendous spaciousness. Stable, peaceful, spacious. That's you. And this is our practice. So we'll sit together in silence for a few minutes. Thank you so much for your practice. Thank you for practicing with me. Thank you for practicing together. And may our time together benefit all beings, especially you.